Good afternoon. It's 12:06 and you're tuned to 89.1 FM WBOY. This is Artcentric Midday Matters, and we'd love to hear from you today during our conversation. 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon with my co-host, Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And it's very warm and sunny out there today, and it's reflecting right into the WBOI studios, I think, today, because we're discussing some especially compassionate art centricity in this midday hour, beginning with a look into the story behind the University of St. Francis's traveling exhibit Memoria, Assisi and the Jews. And for that, the university's Center for Service Engagement Director, Katrina Bedeker, is here with us, and Father Andre Serino, the co-author of Three Heroes of Assisi in World War II, is joining us by phone. And then in our second segment, it's Dr. Peter Rothman and Karen Rothermund-Aker in the guest seats, ready to share the love and the art-centric perspective of the Rock and Docs Music Fest tradition. But first, because Sarah and I are painfully aware of just how much art centricity is on that local radar every weekend and how nearly impossible it is to track all of those little blips out there, we each have a quick tip art pick for you that might otherwise fly right under your radar. And so what's your pick, Sarah?
My pick is a show that's going on at Pint and Slice tonight, which is at 816 Calhoun Street in downtown Fort Wayne. It's a band, Tune Fancy, which is actually our intern, Jack Aikenbrook, is in. Really talented group, and they're playing at Pint and Slice tonight from 7 to 9:30. And the show last time was sold out, so I would advise getting there quite early. Eat some pizza and enjoy some music.
And get ready for some great music. And I'm not in exact conflict with you because they could do both. They're kind of close enough and spread out through the evening. But I am suggesting a great Wooden Nickel Presents concert that's tonight, too. It features Brad Dourer and the Restless Spirits, Austin Parrish, and Robert Harrison. And what a great assortment of even more musical goodness. And it's all free. It's hosted by the amazing Bob Retz and his lovely wife. And the show starts at 6 at their Wooden Nickel location on Anthony. That's 3422 North Anthony. So you could do it all. Mm-hmm. You could do something else entirely, but we certainly enjoy, encourage you to go out and enjoy the art centricity. And now it is our great pleasure to welcome the University of St. Francis's Center for Service Engagement Director, Katrina Bedeker, and by phone, Father Andre Serino.
Thank you so much. We're happy to be here.
And we're happy to have you here. And the University of St. Francis is sharing a very meaningful and powerful pair of events with the community shortly. Why don't you tell us what this photo exhibit and Father Andre's lecture and book signing represent, Katrina?
Certainly. We're really happy to bring this exhibit to the university. It's called Memoria, Assisi and the Jews, 1943-44, and it is a traveling exhibit which will transport the viewer to Italy in 1943 during Germany's wartime occupation of the central and northern parts of the country. So through the words, images, and perspective of Donaldo Brunacci, and Father Andre, I'm sure, will have lots of stories to tell you more about him. Mm-hmm. The exhibit recounts the dramatic saving of several hundred Jewish refugees at the end of World War II in Assisi. We are also going to be bringing Father Andre Serino here for a guest lecture during that time. The exhibit is here from March 17th through the 22nd, and they can see that in the North Campus building at the University of St. Francis from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. But Father Andre's guest lecture and book signing is Tuesday, March 19th at 7:30, so Tuesday, in the same area, the North Campus Auditorium and Foyer, which is on the north side of Spring Street, directly across from the Brookside Mansion.
And I know both you and Father Andre have had first-hand experience in the whole scene and the scenario and within a pilgrimage in this area. And Father Andre, I'd like to welcome you to the show as well.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much for coming, or you're on your way to, and coming to Fort Wayne with this exhibit. For those folks that are not familiar with the terrain, literally in the geography, I say you all have shared this pathway before. So why don't you tell us a little bit, set the scene for us.
Well, you're talking about the city of Assisi, which is north of Rome, about an hour and a half to 2 hour drive. It's a very tiny little town or city. They call it a city. And it was the place of the Jews, that the Jews went to during World War II, amongst many refugees. And three of the protagonists, one of whom I knew very well, Donaldo Brunacci, who died in his 90s and in 2007, was really the protagonist and the, if you will, the person who was deputed ultimately by the Vatican to work tirelessly for the preservation of the lives of Jewish people. The Jewish people were kind of enmeshed in a very huge refugee population that went to this little village of Assisi.
And your personal friendship or acquaintance with Don Aldo Brunacci, when did you first, well, meet him and also meet his story and understand his story, or is that what set you on your path to write such a book and share such information?
Well, I met him in 1980 when I first made a pilgrimage myself. Okay. In Assisi. And in 84, I was invited to actually work on the pilgrimage staff. So I'm in my 30th year of working, bringing pilgrims to Assisi. Over the years, with Donaldo up until his death, I discovered that he was the bishop's representative at the time for the concealment of the Jews. The Vatican had sent a letter to Bishop Nicolini. The letter was sent by Bishop Montini, who later became Pope Paul VI. Mm-hmm. Bishop Montini sent a letter asking that Assisi would conceal or help, first of all, work with refugees, especially the Jewish people. And at a meeting, Donaldo always recounted this story. There was a priest meeting going on in Assisi in early 1943, and the bishop called Donaldo aside and showed him the letter from the Vatican, asking him to participate with himself in specifically concealing the Jewish people that came into Assisi. Mm-hmm. There were no Jews in Assisi before this invasion, if you will, if I can use that term, of the refugees at that time. Donaldo said that the letter had to be destroyed. They couldn't keep any evidence on hand of what they were doing. And the bishop said to Donaldo, I want only you to be the person involved. You cannot speak about this, and especially to no other person in the clergy, because they weren't sure where there were of the security or the confidentiality of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they began to welcome the Jewish people in, and they concealed them in various places in the city, such as the convents, or what we call friaries, where the men religious live. The children were able to be put into school, and they gave them false identity papers. Mm-hmm. To be able to live there, number one, and you needed the false identity papers in order to obtain what they call rations. I remember that a little bit from World War II myself, the idea of rationing.
Mm-hmm.
But to get food, they would have needed identity papers. And Donaldo got involved with a local printer, printing false identity papers. Mm-hmm. And since the Allies had already advanced to the city of Rome by 1943, the way they protected themselves is on the false identity papers, they gave the Jews names of people in southern Italy, so the Germans could not trace their papers.
Mm-hmm.
So they were safe. The strange thing happened, though, there's one Jewish woman who happened to speak with a Venetian accent from the north. They almost caught her and said, you speak with a Venetian accent and you have the name of a southern name here. And she says, I did some early studies up there. She made it up, and I acquired the accent.
Oh my! What a heroic effort on everybody's part, and what a master plan that could be carried off. I understand such things were born out of necessity and carried off, but my goodness, what a tale! What's it like? I'll ask you both, Father Andre. You lead the pilgrimages, and you've been on one on it with him, Katrina. What is the impact of actually exploring this space yourself?
I'll answer that question first. I have to say, first of all, I'm not a Catholic, and I work at a Catholic university that's Franciscan. And so, you know, when you work at a Catholic university that has a Franciscan focus, you come to learn about St. Francis and even about Sister Claire, who is the mother of the Poor Clares, which is another sisterhood that developed around St. Francis's story and mm-hmm. at the same time as St. Francis. But to go to the places where these people lived, and they were sort of extreme people, and see what happened and how that has developed over time, to see those sacred places, to hear the stories, to see where they lived and where they died, where they carried on their ministry, is just a very moving thing. And I think it helps us, and perhaps that's why I got to go, in particular because of my position, mm-hmm. Service and helping those who are persecuted is something that's very, very much part of that Franciscan value. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think being there helped me to understand that, not just in a head way, but very much in a heart way. And I credit so much of that to our two wonderful leaders. To Father Andre, who is one of the leaders, and oh my gosh, Jean-Francois, and I can't remember his last name. Godet, is that it?
Godet,
who is a Franciscan scholar from Bonaventure. So we had Father Andre, who's a very passionate, wonderful lecturer on this, talking at very different places that we went throughout the pilgrimage, giving us lectures and. Engaging us in Mass and communion in very, very special sacred places. And then we had also Jean-Francois, who offered us just wonderful information about Franciscan spirituality and other kinds of Franciscan topics.
I would like to just take a second and remind our listeners that we are having a wonderful discussion about the University of St. Francis's traveling exhibit, Memoria, Assisi and the Jews, and that is in tandem with the lecture and book signing happening also at St. Francis by Father Andre Serino, who is the co-author of Three Heroes of Assisi in World War II, Bishop Giuseppe Nicolini, Colonel Valentin Mueller, and Don Aldo Brunacci. Sorry for my Americanization of all those pronunciations. If you have a question or a comment, and certainly this is very intriguing, you can give us a call at 260-452-1185 or post it on our Facebook page or go to our email middaymatters@nipr.fm and share your own thoughts. In the meantime, Father Andre, it sounds like you maximize a very, very impactful pilgrimage and situation, and then you have translated it wonderfully to the written word. And I know that you're an author and have written on a variety of subjects, but exactly how were you inspired to write this book?
Well, Donaldo had contracted cancer late in life, in his late 80s, and I had been collecting material just to alert our pilgrims to what this man had done, because they would meet this historical figure. We stayed right in the place mm-hmm. where he lived, mm-hmm. and he was really the director of the whole Casa Papa Giovanni, and So I had amassed all these papers, and I one evening approached him and said to him, Donaldo, would you be interested in me publishing these? And he, in his modesty, simply said back to me, that would be nice. And I managed to go to the local publisher in Assisi, whom I knew, and I spoke to Maurizio Zubeli, and I said, would you be interested in doing this? He says, absolutely, and let's do it before he dies.
Yes.
So we got it out in 2005, and he died in 2007.
Oh, my.
Donaldo filled me in on quite a bit of detail. There were more than he involved in the concealment of the Jewish people. One other major figure would have been Bishop Nicolini, and I'll speak a lot about this Benedictine bishop during the lecture that I give. But another key figure there, too, and I'll speak about him as well, was Colonel Valentin Mueller, the German commander of Assisi during World War II, mm-hmm. who is considered the savior of the city, who actually has been honored by the citizens of Assisi with monuments, even a street named after him. And what this man did, actually, because if he did not work to preserve Assisi from the fate of Monte Cassino, there would have been no Jews saved in that city. It would have been bombed as Monte Cassino was bombed. So there's a lot of history behind these three figures, if you will, these three heroes of Assisi mm-hmm. in World War II. And Mueller, very, very interesting person, and I do know his, I knew his son, who died in 2005, and I know his family in Germany today, because one of my colleagues is married to Mueller's granddaughter, and for that reason, we've unearthed quite a bit of history, also from the archives of Assisi, concerning Colonel Valentin Mueller. So there's some fascinating items about this German commander, who was a medical doctor, mm-hmm. was an MD, so he wanted to get Assisi declared a hospital city. And there's a whole intrigue about that that I'm going to share during the lecture. And Bishop Nicolini, this well-loved bishop, is another person I hope to speak about. And Donaldo Brunacci, how he was interviewed by a German film, an Israeli film director by the name of Alessandro Ramati, mm-hmm. who came from Israel to interview Donaldo. And he wanted to just to make a film called Assisi Underground. After interviewing Donaldo for weeks, he goes back and changes the entire plot of the film, and it gets skewed. And Donaldo's comment about the film always was in Italian. He would say, "È un romanzo," translated, "It's a soap opera." So I hope to unravel some of that, the details of that experience of Donaldo Brunacci with Ramati, and some of the beautiful, beautiful stories that Donaldo told about his working with the refugees and especially the Jewish people.
Amazing. And yes, thank you for capturing all of this.
We have a caller on the line with a question about the exhibit. Daniel, welcome to Midday Matters.
Yes, thank you. And I can say that I'm a student at St. Francis, but I don't want to exactly say I'm not Catholic. I'd rather say that I have not been baptized into the communion of those affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church. So a little bit of a way of looking at the position on the religion I have. But anyway, the question is, if I might suggest that World War II is an exercise in testing the limits of technological and quote-unquote scientific empire building, do Franciscan values of healing and care and attention to nature and animals bear witness to an alternative vision of reality? And it continues, for instance, eugenics and incorrect, quote, science said that Jews were subhumans, but the heroes of Assisi disagreed. And again, is this an extension of valuing truly nature and biological values of creation, both human and animal creatures, and nature as the habitat of humans and other creatures?
Hmm.
Well, if I can say a quick word to that, St. Francis himself, he wrote a poem that's called The Canticle of the Creatures, mm-hmm. and if you study Italian literature, that is the first piece of recognized Italian literature that you would be a... his whole stance on... fraternitas, if you will, which is a fraternity, but that's not a great translation in English, but a kind of a connection, an intimate connection with all of creation is exhibited not only in his poem, but in all the stories we have about St. Francis's life. So St. Francis's respect and deep respect, even for picking worms off the road to preserve them so they wouldn't be killed, his deep respect for life and for nature, he used to preach to flowers. when he saw them in a field, a beautiful field of poppies, and he would just preach to them, his biographers say. So St. Francis's love for creation, for life, for nature, is definitely transferred into the people of Assisi. The people of Assisi know St. Francis' spirituality. They incarnate it. They live it. So when it came time for them to do what they did during World War II, it was done out of utmost respect and utmost love for creation, for nature, for the people who came to the city desperately seeking security for their lives. Your question was quite wide, but I hope I've said something back to it.
Thank you, Father Andre. That was a very wonderful and inspirational answer, and I think that you hit the heart of it. Certainly something that you get the vibrations and the whole feeling as you take people like Katrina on this pilgrimage, and now you have a chance to share it with folks in several media. Is that a dream come true for you?
Well, to be honest, I never ever saw myself going into this pathway, but as doors opened, I just walked through them.
then it was meant to be, and I think that everybody benefits from that. Certainly, the city of Fort Wayne, though far from Assisi, is certainly a caring, loving, giving community, and will be absolutely delighted, I think, to welcome you and your lecture and this exhibit.
Yeah, Father Andre, would you say a little more about what's in the exhibit? I'm kind of remember some of the things, but I thought you might be able to give a good broad overview of what they would see in the exhibit.
Yes, there are two exhibits. There's one in Assisi, and there's one that came out of St. Bonaventure's University, which predated the one in Assisi. And I saw them both, and basically they will take the lives of the main protagonists in the time span of 1943 to 44 in Assisi, and kind of delineate their roles, what they actually did, risking their lives, every one of them, including the German commander, because what he did for Assisi during World War II was treasonous as far as the Third Reich was concerned. In fact, he was imprisoned after the war for a short while. So the exhibit takes each one of these characters and just gives a kind of a synopsis, and you can't capture certainly on in displays what these people did, but the photos are quite touching and quite telling, I think, when you view them, and also reading along with, or I don't remember if there were any audio type of techniques that were used, but nevertheless, the exhibit does give a good picture of what a little village did to save between 250 and 300 Jewish people in World War II.
Fantastic. And we do have three of those pictures from the exhibit posted on our Facebook page, that is Midday Matters, and we hope that folks will go and take a quick peek, but more certainly we hope folks will enjoy the exhibit and certainly your lecture, and we have enjoyed speaking so much with you, Father Andre, and best of luck, and there's a lot of heart in the heartland, and we will be welcoming you, and we would certainly ask you, Katrina, to just give one quick rundown of what people can expect.
Certainly. So the exhibit, the museum, is the Memoria Assisi and the Jews, 1943 to 44, will be here on March 17th through the 22nd, and that's open for viewing at 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. during that time period. And then Father Andre Cirino's guest lecture is Tuesday, March 19th at 7:30 p.m. And both the exhibit and the lecture are in the North Campus Auditorium and Foyer of the University of St. Francis.
Great. Thank you both so much for being a part of Midday Matters. And thank you especially to Father Andre Cirino for calling in and making the travel to Fort Wayne in a few weeks. We need to take a quick break for the news here on Artscentricity Midday Matters with Julia Meek and myself. But before we do that, support for this program on WBOY is provided by United Way of Allen County, helping kids succeed in school with 15 education network partners offering ways to mentor or tutor a child, uweducationnetwork.org. And support is also provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Take the guesswork out of your retirement plan. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on the web at reinboldandanderson.com.
On the next Fresh Air, a history of the FBI's secret intelligence gathering operations based on 70,000 recently declassified documents. We talk with Tim Weiner about his book, Enemies. It reveals J. Edgar Hoover's secret operations against U.S. citizens he suspected were anarchists, communists, communist pawns, radical leftists, or homosexuals. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Good afternoon, I'm Sean Beter with WBOY News. Indiana's Attorney General says every school district in the state should have a police presence. Attorney General Greg Zeller said Thursday he supports a bill in the General Assembly that would provide matching state grants to help schools create or expand school resource officer programs. He says these officers are placed in schools to do more than just guard the door, and that they can become mentors for students and prevent problems before they occur. National School Resource Officer Association Executive Director Mo Kennedy says school resource officers would be trained law enforcement personnel and should be armed, but that they would also have a role in education and mentoring students. Tea Party group Americans for Prosperity is entering the debate in Indiana over Governor Mike Pence's proposed 10% income tax cut. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, the organization announced it will air TV ads in support of that cut.
The Indiana chapter of Americans for Prosperity will push for Governor Pence's tax cut in a grassroots effort that includes directing calls to lawmakers and door-to-door campaigning in parts of the state. AFP Indiana State Director Chase Downham says its television ads will air in targeted markets around the state. He wouldn't say exactly how much the organization is spending, only saying the ad buy will be in the six-figure range. And Downham says his group will push for the 10% cut and nothing less.
Now's not the time to talk about compromise when we're talking about growing our economy and putting nearly $500 million back into the pockets of Hoosier taxpayers and small businesses.
House Speaker Brian Bosma, who's expressed reluctance with Pence's tax cut, says he considers himself one of AFP's biggest allies in the state house and welcomes the group's input. But he also says he won't be pressured by their campaign.
My perspective is sustainability for the future, funding some of our key priorities like roads and public education, and certainly keeping our budget as lean as humanly possible while meeting those goals.
Bosma says the April revenue forecast will play a large role in determining the viability of Pence's tax cut. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And state officials say the rate of youths who return to Indiana prisons within 3 years of release has dropped. The Indiana Department of Correction and its Division of Youth Services cited the decrease in a study that showed about a third of the youth offenders released in 2009 had been imprisoned again in 2012. The rate peaked at nearly 40% in 2010. Officials say the Youth Services Division was set up to provide services to help young prisoners successfully re-enter society. The agency has also worked with courts to reduce the number of juvenile offenders sent to prison and has taken steps to reduce the lengths of their stays behind bars. The population of juveniles in Indiana prisons has dropped from almost 1,000 in 2008 to about 500 today. You're listening to Midday Matters Artscentric here on WBOI.
Welcome back to Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY. The time is 12:35. If you have a question or comment, feel free to give us a call at 260-452-1185. You can post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon with my co-host, Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And we are still on the trail of art-centric passion and compassion, switching gears just a little bit to focus on a great bunch of docs and rockers and longtime followers that support a truly wonderful cause in a most art-centric manner. And who better to have with us for that discussion than a pillar of the Rock and Docs Music Fest tradition himself, and that's Dr. Peter Rothman, and the long successful event coordinator, Karen Rothermond Aker. Welcome to our art-centric circle.
Thank you.
Now, this is a special year for the Rock and Docs Music Fest.
Correct.
Right? And some people say 13 isn't a lucky number, but we disagree.
We say lucky 13.
We had better. For folks that aren't familiar with the organization, its mission, and perhaps even this joyous event, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, this is our, as Pete was saying, the 13th year. And we started Rock and Docs Music Fest just so that we could be able to give money to the nonprofits for folks who cannot afford to get medical insurance and that type of stuff so they can have their patient services. And it's evolved over the years to become a lot of fun. We have several bands with medical professionals that are in there playing in the bands. We have silent auctions. We have artistic pieces and things like that. And it's just become just so much fun now that people come year in and year out just to be able to see their friends.
And Peter, you really are a pillar of this whole concept and organization, right?
Well, I wouldn't say me alone,
but my
medical
yes.
musicians. I think the main point is that music can make a difference here, and our bands that have been playing through the years, chiefly Frankie and the Bananas, started by Dr. Frank Byrne and myself back and Nurse Craig It back in 2000. Excuse me, we started in 1986, but we've been playing since 2000, and then we have Next Exit with Dr. Antalis' group, and then Dr. Kintanar and Dr. Kaplanis' Sheba. And so these bands will be playing, but we feel music can make a difference. And through this musical event, which not only do we have live bands playing from 6:30 to 11:30 this coming Friday, March 15th, there will be food provided by Pizza Hut. There will be wine, beer, soft beverages, soft drinks, and there will obviously be this is all for people 21 and over, but there will also be the silent auction and the silent treasures, which Karen will describe. But the main point is that every bit of the money raised at the door by the those coming goes towards, 100% goes towards the charities, which include Matthew 25, a Super Shot, the Fort Wayne Sexual Assault Center, and Riley Children Hospital for our local regional patients. All the costs are taken care of by corporate donations in advance.
Well, once again, you've gathered a lovely bunch of worthy causes to share the money and the love that you make. And I think it's implied there's going to be a lot of rocking going on. I didn't hear about a dance floor, but I do assume there is one there so people can really have a good time amidst all the other art centricity that's going on.
This is taking place at Species Fieldhouse, and they are devoting one big basketball court for dancing. So yes, this is definitely a danceable situation with hard driving rock and roll from the 50s through the new millennium, played by all three bands. So we want people to come dance, enjoy, have fun, and realize that they're making a difference in providing health care in our society here in Fort Wayne.
Before we get a listing of the non-musical art centricity that goes with all of this, you bring up something intriguing because, as you say, Dr. Peter, your band's been together since 1986 and of course, flowed right into the whole scheme of Rock and Docs Music Fest. But is it, I find it intriguing and really delightful that so many of your doctors and people in related medical field and nurses, like you say, are making music. Why do you think that there's a drive to do that, speaking for yourself?
Well, first of all, doctors are real people too.
Oh, indeed.
And the music many physicians are artists and musicians, by the way, also. And, you know, I told my patients through the years, don't put away your instruments after you graduate high school. Keep playing, because not only is it fun, but the fellowship of being together as a band through the years. And then through the years, we have played for a variety of medical and educational charitable functions here in town. So giving of yourself in this way and having a ball at the same time, and frankly, being in the midst of a band, playing in front of hundreds of people, is a high unto itself. It's great fun, and everyone's enjoying it. The more people dance, the happier we are.
And you are rock stars, by the way. I mean, just to go on record for saying that as well. This is WBOI's Midday Matters, very art-centric Friday edition, and we are speaking with Dr. Peter Rothman and Karen Rothman-Aker all about the Rock and Docs Music Fest, how it came to be, what you can expect when you go, how very art-centric it is. We have, Sarah has an important announcement to make, and she'll tell you how you can get a hold of us if you have a question or comment as well.
So Karen and Dr. Peter very nicely brought in a pair of some tickets to Rock and Docs, which is happening next week.
A week from tonight,
and it starts at 6 p.m., goes till midnight. And so if you call in now and you leave your first and last name with us, that's all you need to do. Just give us a call. Let us know that you're listening and having a good time, and you'd like to be able to go to Rock and Docs again. It's a week from today. Starts at 6 o'clock. We have a free pair of tickets, and all you need to do is give us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, not for the tickets. You need to call in. But on our Facebook page, any questions or comments, Midday Matters, or you can email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm.
And like we say, the hits just keep on a coming. 13 years now for the Rock and Docs Music Fest, and certainly it is a world of good music that we can enjoy, and a lot of rocking going on. But what non-musical art centricity goes with this event, Karen?
I think probably one of the most popular things that we have is our silent auction and our silent treasures that we have. I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. We have over about 250 different items that we have there, a lot of good deals, and we have a lot of very talented artists that not only participate with a silent charity and paint the chairs, they donate items if they painted pottery, basically about anything that you can have. It's been very, very nice and very talented.
And we're going to hear in just a second how really you probably spend your whole year collecting all of this stuff and getting it ready for such a yearly event. But in the meantime, tell folks about the charity, and that's with an I in it, two I's in it.
The Rockin' Charity kind of came up along the line because we had so many artists that wanted to become involved. So we had a sponsorship where a company could go and buy a chair for $250, and then we found an artist who would go back and paint it, and then it was donated back to the auction, and then we would auction it off. It's become extremely popular over the years. We have maybe 30 to 35 different art objects that come in and artists that participate in there, and it's very unique. I mean, we've had everything from different, I guess, I can't remember, Martha Stewart, behind bars.
That's an interesting topic.
It was one of those rocking chairs. Kind of funny. And then we have the rocking docks. So, I mean, you always have the Adirondack and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's always interesting. But, you know, I can't get over the types of creativity that they have and the different things from humor to just absolutely beautiful items.
And I just want to congratulate Diane, who called and won the tickets to Rock and Docs. So Diane left her first and last name, and those tickets will be waiting for you at the event a week from today. So thanks for calling, and thanks for listening.
And certainly if you have a question or a comment, or just like to put your good word in about this kind, 13 years of rockitudinal fun each year at the Rock and Docs Music Fest, then we'd like to hear from you at 260-452-1185, or that you can certainly post on our Facebook page. In the meantime, you say there's a silent auction, and there's silent treasures?
Yeah, the silent auction, they have pretty basic items that you would normally find in a lot of the different silent auctions. And then the silent treasures that we have consist of the charity, different types of donations that the artist may give. And we also end up some vintage items that come in that are very unique and nice. So it's just different things, different treasures for different folks.
And just as Dr. Peter mentioned a little bit ago, that doctors are people too, and certainly like to perform music and share your music. Karen, we like to maintain that artists in the community really are certainly above average talented, perhaps, and also giving. And do you find that through the year as you are collecting all of these pieces of and treasures to share?
Definitely. And we call them the rock gods, by the way, because they get up there. they love it. Fort Wayne's very philanthropic. And the first time that we had the Rock and Docks, I was very surprised by the talent that we had in it. Now I'm not surprised. I just assume it, because they are so talented and giving in their careers one way or another, whether or not it's of their time. I mean, people just, you know, go bend over backwards to be able to help us out. And financially, they're also very, you know, philanthropic, and they give in different ways for that as well. So I think Fort Wayne's a very lucky community to have the people that we have here to support us.
And back to the music just a little bit. Tell folks what they can expect from the bands. Dr. Peter, you mentioned, I know that Sheba will be playing, and Next Exit, and
and of course, we have Frankie and the Bananas, and we play 60s, 70s, 80s, and believe it or not, even music of the new millennium. And but we definitely gear our music to danceability, as well as good old memories of the golden oldies, but new songs for the younger folk too. And we are more golden oldies, and Sheba is more more modern, let's say, in orientation too. But but everyone will hear traditional music that they know, and they're basically cover tunes in essence, that everyone knows these songs and will love them. And you can drink to them, and you can dance to them.
Oh, I never thought about the drinking to them concept, but yes, and it really is. It's the solid gold, and so you will hear songs from your, well, one's past if one is old enough, or one's a family memory album. I think that if you're young enough. But everybody likes to dance. Everybody likes to have a good time, support a worthy cause. But we've discussed this before. But I'll ask you again, because you always give a good answer. What is the attraction to the golden oldies and the golden but not so oldies to rock and roll?
Well, I think that those of us that grew up with rock and roll, this was our mother's milk 40, 50 years ago. And so we, needless to say, when playing these songs, we hark back to junior high school, fond memories. It can be debated whether the 50s and 60s were as wonderful as we think they were, but in our memories and in our hearts, they were. So the music we play today is a tie-in from our youth to our present ages. And what we love is we played the 60s parties at Carroll Middle School. The young kids just adore this music also, and it's like they discovered it for the first time. They say, wow, where did this music come from? And music that's been around for years. So it bridges the time gap, but it also brings us back to simpler times when we were younger, and happy times. And we want to carry that same feeling through the years to our audiences now. So our group plays everything from Chuck Berry to Pink,
and well too. I mean, we have to brag. We have to cross reference just a second that your band has performed on our Meet the Music show, and yeah, it's rocking and it's rolling, and it's a wonderful good time. And I do admire your not only leap into the 21st century, but your inclusion of Pink. That's pretty bold, I gotta say. And folks can hear all of this and more. Why don't you give us a little layout? We have a whole basketball court, as you said, devoted to, is that the dance? Is that the whole event?
I think it must be kept in mind that Karen chose the name is Rockin' Madness, and we are really centering around March Madness, and there will be four large screen TVs
going on
the whole time, so nobody's going to miss their NCAA tournament basketball games.
Karen does think of everything. That's a very good cause, and in the art centricity of sports, March Madness is traditionally, yes. That's what you've got to do. So in the meantime, if you can rip yourself away from the one of the large screen TVs, what can one will wander around through the Rockin' Madness, and on that same space, is that where you're going to find, is everything centrally located?
Everything is all in one place. And we also, for the food, Pizza Hut is bringing in, we have meatless pastas, and we have salad, and we have veggie type pizzas as well for Lent. So we've tried to maintain that as well. We have beers.
How thoughtful.
We have beers and micro beers and different types of wines and wine coolers. Those are the types of alcohol that we have. And everything is just centrally located. And as Pete touched on before, with the type of music that we have, it's just geared to be a happy, fun event. Mm-hmm. And people come year in and year out and have made friends there. So it's really just, I can't stress enough how much fun it is and how much the people have grown to love each other as they have the event itself.
It has to be.
And it has to be mentioned that in the past 12 years, we have raised over $400,000 for these local charities. And again, everyone showing up at the door, 100% of their ticket fee, which is $12
at the door,
mm-hmm. $10 prepay, goes towards these nonprofit charities.
And also, I really have to stress that we have a great group of volunteers. We have volunteers that, as you were saying, that stick with us year in and year out. And it takes a whole year of planning to be able to do what we put on. And we have another batch of volunteers that come and work the event. We're grassroots, we're volunteers. We don't have large national funding. We have to go and get funding every year, and we give it away at the end of the year, and we start over every year. So we don't make it easy on ourselves, but we have a great bunch of people.
That's just a beautiful story all in itself, and it makes for the most successful now 13 years and celebrating Rockin' Madness.
I also want to add that Lucky 13, it is St. Patrick's Day weekend, and so the Shamrock will be featured as well. And in line with this, in our intermezzo between the rock groups, Craig It and John and Molly Brogan's group, the Distractions will be playing Irish traditional music for a half hour between the transition between the rock groups.
How art centric is that? And also going with the green, wearing of the green, and rocking with the madness all in the same evening. I also, by the way, did hear that I understand the Lenten dishes, and that's most appreciated, but I heard because it is St. Patrick's weekend that at least if you're honorary Irish, you can have a dispensation. If you happen to give up beer and wine for Lent, you can drink it at the Rockin' Docks.
Oh, that's madness. Wonderful. Glad to hear that. Uh-huh. I'll remember to use that line.
But it's a wonderful way just to celebrate all of the goodness that you folks do really work hard all year round to present a lovely celebration to the public, and they can share their good spirit and their donations. And you, Peter, and you, Karen, you know how everybody is sharing their music and making a good time.
Mm-hmm. And we have to give a great deal of credit to the Spiess organization. Spiess Fieldhouse provides the venue, and it's a beautiful venue, mm-hmm. and very well laid out. And so, as we said, everything is, you can just wander around between the food and the silent auction and the art treasures and the dance floor. Very pleasant environment, well-maintained and beautifully donated by Spiess.
Two numbers I'm interested in, approximately, and of course pre and as well as working the event, approximately how many volunteers do you think you have?
We have a volunteer organization of about 40. And of those 40, we have about 15 to 20 of them that are the most active. The rest of them do things in the background. And then for the event itself, we have somewhere between about 40 to 60 people that help us with the setup and the teardown.
It's certainly a good battery of soldiers right out there doing it, but there's a lot to do. So it's not, you know, you make good use of your labor, it sounds like, to get all this done.
And we had over 1,200 people last year for that one night event. And years ago, when we used to do two night events at Headwaters Park, we'd have upwards of 3,500, 3,600 people participating.
That was the second number I was going after, and that's most impressive. And do you anticipate having a good crowd? And is there a point at which the tickets are sold out or there's no more room to rock and
roll? We haven't run into that yet.
Okay. That is a nice big space.
Yeah, we can always take those walls and push those suckers back if we need to, so that's fine.
And one of the switches from Headwaters obviously concerned weather situations. So
yes.
Now being indoors at Spiess, the weather is irrelevant at this time.
And it really is a good month of the year, especially with that Lenten dispensation that I mentioned earlier. But it is a nice time, and people are looking for, well, something fun to do. And certainly right here in the Fortland this very week, people are going to be newly released from a cabin fever with all of the bad weather. So looking for a good turnout. Interesting that you have solved the problem or the conflict of the March Madness, the ball games going on with the big screen TV. Is that that's something that, well, you haven't always done, but
We learned very quickly. We learned, and when we moved inside to Spiess, we had the opportunity to put the TVs in there, and so it's nice because we usually keep that, I don't know, that big bracket thing. I don't know what it's called, but you know, we have somebody that goes around and keeps that updated as well, and so we just have a lot of fun with it, and we've tried to make it so that everybody has an opportunity to be able to find something within that evening that fits what they find as fun. And
that's really that is a treasure, whether it's hidden or not.
That's right.
Yes. Will the silent auction is there a shutoff time for the art bidding and purchases?
Yeah, there is. We shut it off at various times. We have a 2 or 3 table that we shut off the times.
Okay.
And I think the last one is at 10:45. And then we try to close out.
Okay, it goes through the evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the meantime, the event itself runs between 6 and midnight?
It starts at the doors open at 6. The music starts at 6:30. Music will be playing continuously through 11:30 plus. And plus means there's usually a jam session at the end that can go on towards midnight.
And that's going to be rockers versus Irish. And so that's going to be an interesting jam session.
Irish in between.
Definitely a crossover. That
I think I could vote for the Irish winning this time.
Well, and I should also say that if you've enjoyed hearing Dr. Peter Rothman today, you should tune in to Midday Matters on Wednesdays, because that's our time together where we discuss local health issues. So thanks for coming in outside of your scheduled time today, Dr. Rothman.
My pleasure, Sarah.
And he wears a lot of hats and he wears them well, don't you
he
think?
He does.
And Julia, I want to also just take this opportunity to thank Pete and all the other groups and the bands that come in to play, because they have a very, very rough schedule. And for them to be able to take the time away to be able to practice and come in and do this for us, it makes all the difference in the world. And we also have some absolutely wonderful sponsors who have been with us year in and year out. And
we love to name drop. Why don't you give us a couple of those?
Well, this year's sponsors is we have First Federal Bank of the Midwest, Physicians Plan, Health Plan, Professional Emergency Physicians, Steel Dynamics, Sweetwater Sound, Indiana Surgical Specialist, Medical Protective, Shawnee Construction and Engineering, and Women's Health Advantage. And all of those have been multiple year supporters. And those are our cash. We have multiple supporters that come in kind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Peter, why don't you tell us one more time the charities that this year's funds raised will be going to?
Okay, we will be raising funds for Super Shot Program. 1 in 5 two-year-olds in the United States are not fully immunized, and this Super Shot Program here in Fort Wayne makes sure that our kids get immunized. We have Matthew 25 Health and Dental Clinic, Fort Wayne Sexual Assault Treatment Center, and again, Riley Hospital for Children for local Allen County residents.
And that is the Rockin' Madness, March 15th, 2013, at Spiess Fieldhouse, 6 to midnight. Do not miss it.
Thanks, everyone, for coming in today and for listening and for your calls. We do appreciate it. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1 and streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.